So by way of talking about beginnings and beginning anew, I thought to look at a poem written about 500 years before our common era by a female nun and teacher, Patacara. Today I'd like to just say that Patacara, while a wife, mother, and daughter, was struck by a series of tragedies which ripped off the thin veneer or screening that we call sanity. In time, as she wandered around beset with grief, nearing madness, she met the Buddha and was touched by what he said. And she became a Buddhist practitioner. Most of us do not come to this practice mad, having fallen into the pits of hell. However, we often do arrive at the door because we are suffering. Maybe a friend or a parent died. Maybe we lost a job or a partner. Maybe we are simply lonely or feeling disconnected and alone. Maybe we are just afraid of who knows what. So we come to Buddhism or Zen, hoping for some relief, for some tools to not feel so uncomfortable, unsettled, and ill at ease. Sometimes we come to the door and none of the above apply. We're healthy, our friends and families intact, and our careers, our jobs are fulfilling. Yet we wonder if there isn't something we aren't missing. Deeper meaning or purpose, perhaps. More engagement or zest. Maybe a more intimate connection with others and ourselves. Something. Something brings us. Maybe take a moment now to mark that place in yourself. If you are new to this practice and this place, what brought you? And that thing that brought you, where in your body, below your neck, does it sit right now? And if you are beginning anew today again, how come? Really? Why are you here? So Patacara marked her place of suffering and became a Buddhist practitioner, committing herself to seeing through her pain, her uncomfortableness, and her unsettledness. One day, after a waking up experience, she wrote this poem, which lays out the field of practice and opportunity that lies before us as we walk this wisdom path. She wrote, "When they plow their fields and sow seeds in the earth, when they care for their partners and children, young Brahmas find riches. But I've done everything right and followed the rule of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why haven't I found peace? Bathing my feet, I watch the bathwater spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Then I took a lamp and went into my cell, checked the bed and sat down on it. I took a needle and pushed the wick down. When the lamp went out, my mind was freed." So as I talk about the poem and the way it relates to our practice, I will hold the lines and images lightly, allowing for some different conclusions than Patacara might actually be making. She started the poem saying, "When they plow their fields, and sow seeds in the earth, when they care for their wives and children, young Brahmins find riches. These lines on the surface need little explication. If you study hard in college, you get good grades. If you work hard, you will find security, promotion, and financial gain and security. However, Patakara's next line, "But I've done everything right and followed the rule of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why haven't I found peace?" Lean both forward and backward. I sense she is saying, "I lived my life in accord with the rules. I was a good daughter, an attentive wife, a mother in love. And yet my life fell apart completely. I studied hard and failed. I worked diligently at my career and have not been promoted and have little security. I have done what I was meant to do, and yet I suffer. I am in pain and I feel unsettled." Patakara looked inside and saw no character flaws or defects. She said, "I am not proud or lazy, and yet. This reminds me of Job in the Old Testament. Although he lived in accordance with his society's norms and rules, although he was upright in his religion, still his animals died, his riches were lost, his children and partner died, his health failed, and when he looked inside, he truly could not find that he was lazy or proud. He could not find his fault in the situation. Sometimes, for no reason, life crashes into us and we are left. We are left in tatters, alone and afraid, and peace is nowhere to be found. We can also look at this line, "But I've done everything right and followed the rule of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why can I not find peace?" We can look at this from a practice perspective. Sometimes we practice correctly and diligently. We follow the precepts. We sit up straight in zazen and let mu do mu. We are kind and generous both on and off the cushion. You look inside and you ask your companions on the way and the teacher if they see something about you that might be holding you back. And you're told you are not lazy or proud. And so you wonder, "Why haven't I found peace?" This can be a frustrating time in practice, filled with doubt, and a rather lonely feeling arises. It is a good time to remember at such a time that you are multi-centered. Sometimes when you sit deeply, the person across from you wakes up. Sometimes when you touch the depths of compassion, another hugs her forgotten neighbor. And sometimes when you cry for joy, another goes dancing for the first time. Zazen is not involved only in one-to-one ratios. It is mysterious, and it is far-reaching. And positive causes and conditions will arise because of your diligence, because of your patience, because of your practice. And if you continue to practice, moment after moment, hour after hour, week after week, and year after year, peace will find you. Patakara continues saying, bathing my feet, I watch the bath water spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Patakara is making an important point here. In classical Buddhism, before you sat down on a cushion, you became mature in morality and ethics. Fortunately, or in many cases not, we have come to this path from a different direction. Yet preparation before entering the Zendo is still important. Before coming to the Zendo, we dress in comfortable clothes for sitting, preferably of a subtle, unpatterned color. We start quieting before we leave the home and walk or drive mindfully, thus preparing the vessel. We leave our shoes straight and in order outside the Zendo because we care. And when we come to the entrance of the Zendo, we bow, letting our concerns, worries, doubts, and goals drop away. For none of those are needed here. We walk unhurriedly to our cushions, bowing to them, and then turning clockwise, bowing to the community. We then take our seat under the Bodhi tree and sit with a straight, upright, and relaxed posture. At each step of the process up until this point, pay attention. Watch the bath water spill down the slope, letting at each step, each thing fall away, slip away, spilling. If you'd like a refresher and need more instruction on Zazen, on posture, attitude, and intention, please look at the first chapter of Robert Aiken's The Morning Star. So we come to the Zendo and we take our seat. And Patakara says, I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. If you've ever seen a country western guy from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s train a horse, or you've watched one too many cowboy movies or shows growing up, forget those images. This is not about breaking a horse with spurs, whips, and other medieval instruments of torture. This is a good horse. You are a prized horse. You want to get to know it and let it get to know you. You want to gentle it, and you do this by becoming familiar with it, by becoming friendly. And finally, one with it. And you can do this in a number of ways. And today, I'll just talk about one way, and tomorrow, I'll break this one way into three parts. Initially, please just count breath. Simply count on the inhale or exhale. Although this is a meditation method, it is not a technique, so it is nothing to force or perfect. Let your breath flow naturally. When you first sit down, take two or three deep breaths all the way into your belly. But then after those breaths, breathe naturally, shallow, if it is shallow, and deep, if it is deep. Count to 10, and at any point when you falter, as you recollect yourself, simply start again at number 1. The point is not to get to 10, but to become fully present or absorbed in each particular, for it is in the particular that we find freedom. It is in dishwashing. It is in cleaning the toilet. It is in counting each breath. It is in hugging your errant daughter or in laughing with your grandson. This is intimate engagement, and when intimately engaged, boundaries that we usually have are left unguarded. The boundaries that keep us apart fall away. And so the distinction of you and I fall away. And it becomes clear that each has no separate self. So again, the point isn't to get to number 10, but to become intimate with each point. And as you do this, let in the sounds of airplanes and trains. Let in the call of ravens and crows. And as you do this, include your sadness and joy, for each point contains all things. We are not sitting here blocking things out. We are sitting here letting things in, all things, each thing. After a time of this practice, a practice some stay with their entire lives, you and the teacher may begin to regard other possible aspects of practice. To say this in the most succinct way, you may move towards koan. Usually mu, or who hears at first, or towards shikantaza, or just sitting, or to sitting in the body, which has a different emphasis than shikantaza. There is not a template for who should move in which direction. Just like with good horses, some are better for jumping, some for dressage, and some for racing. These choices are based on temperament, inclination, and intention. After counting breath for some time and getting to know the horse, the path chosen is often already taken before one might even know it. So again, if you'd like to know more about any or all of these paths, read Aiken's Taking the Path of Zen or the Morning Star for koan or shikantaza practice, and read the Satipatthana Sutra in the Mountain Lamp Sutra book for the path of working with and in the body. A question I hear from time to time is, and how long do I have to practice? How long will it take? I would say it is best if you pack a lunch. Some feel nourished or fed after a short time with practice, and others feel even more hungry after 30 years. So again, like with horses, there is no one right answer. Some just have to see the shadow of the whip, and others have to feel it to the bone. Next, Padakara says, then I took a lamp and went into my cell, checked the bed and sat down on it. I took a needle and pushed the wick down. When the lamp went out, my mind was freed. If we practice diligently, and as our mind and body settles, then like a still and quiet mill pond when a stone is thrown into it, anything can cause within and without, being and non-being, life and death, anything can cause those to completely fall away. This event, which is really a non-event, might be as simple and natural as the light of a lantern going out when the wick is burned through. It might be as simple as looking up, as the sun begins to rise. It might be as natural as the sound of a swan landing on a starlit lake. Anything can be the cause for us seeing and experiencing what is already here, right before our eyes. This is not something you have to create or discover, but in a sense, it is something you turn towards. And when the lamp goes out and your mind finally feels free, your practice has not been completed, but has only just begun. At each transition point in practice, sitting down for the first time, doing Shokan, which is a formalizing of the student-teacher relationship, sewing a rakusu and taking the precepts, doing leadership in the Zendo, and so on, with each of these transition points, Eiken Roshi would say to us, "And now, your practice begins." So in closing, I'd like you to remember, if nothing else from the talk, these two things. Find a way to enjoy your practice, to hold it lightly, not making it into an object. And secondly, create a way to connect with a community of fellow way seekers. For both of these things, finding joy in your practice and connection with a group of fellow pilgrims will hold you even when the river is swollen, even when the bridge is gone, even when the moon has not yet risen. You know, so I'll stop there so that we have some time for questions and answers. So you can ask anything about this particular talk, about beginning or beginning anew, or anything specifically about Zen or specifically about Zazen or generally about Zen. And I'll try to respond. So in coming to this talk, I was told to write something for beginners or beginning anew. And I sort of asked a group of people, I said I thought all my talks were for beginners and for beginning anew. And half the people told me indeed they were, and the other half told me not even close. So it left me utterly confused as to how to go about this talk. So this was a different type of effort.